Welcome to the I Have ADHD podcast, where it's all about education, encouragement, and coaching for adults with ADHD. I'm your host, Kristen Carter, and I have ADHD. Let's chat about the frustrations, humor, and challenges of adulting, relationships, working, and achieving with this neurodevelopmental disorder. I'll help you understand your unique brain, unlock your potential, and move from point A to point B. Hey, what's up? This is Kristen Carter, and you are listening to the I Have ADHD podcast. I am medicated, I am caffeinated, I am regulated, and I am ready to roll. We are going to chat about a much requested topic today, ADHD and pot use. Oh my goodness. So many people have reached out for me to talk about this topic, and I have zero, and I mean zero knowledge on it. And so I haven't done anything with it. My guest today was a regular pot smoker, and it was just recreational for a while until it just wasn't. And she overcame an addiction and then became a coach. And now she helps other ADHDers navigate through this process. Now, pot is often used recreationally by ADHDers to self-medicate. And Natalie, my guest, and I have zero judgment, zero thoughts. All we're bringing you today is our experience, some facts, some research, and really interestingly, like I want to highlight the fact that people with mental health issues, ADHD especially included here, obviously that's what we're talking about, we're going to self-medicate somehow. If we are not properly diagnosed and medicated, we will find a way to feel better. This is just what humans are going to do. We are going to find a way to feel better. I found an amazing article from the CHAD website, chad.org, and I'm going to link it in the show notes, but I want to read some of it as an intro here because I think it's really poignant. So this is from that article. I'm going to link it in the show notes. It says, marijuana is one of the most widely used psychoactive substances worldwide after tobacco and alcohol. Higher rates of all substance use disorders are well documented among adults with ADHD. Compared to people who do not have ADHD, those with ADHD are at increased risk for early initiation of cannabis use, for heavy use, and for developing a cannabis use disorder. The National Epidemiological Survey on Alcohol and Related Conditions in the United States determined that ADHD adults use cannabis 2 to 3 times more than adults without ADHD. That is fascinating. Some research suggests that over their lifetime, people with ADHD are almost 8 times as likely to use cannabis compared to those who do not have ADHD. Cannabis use disorder is also more common in adults with ADHD, and studies show that they are more than twice as likely to meet the criteria than adults without ADHD. Looking at the rates from a different perspective, we learn that among individuals who seek treatment for cannabis use disorder, the rates of ADHD are estimated to be 34 to 46%. This is very important. And so for those of you who are interested in this topic, who maybe are smoking pot recreationally, or maybe it's kind of crossed a line in your mind where you're like, I think this might be more than recreational. That is all we're talking about today. It is going to be wonderful. So let me tell you a little bit about my guest. My guest is Natalie, and she's a San Francisco resident, and she navigates life with her loving husband and 2 spirited daughters, ages 7 and 3. And these are the cutest little girls that I have ever seen. They are so adorable. A seasoned early childhood teacher and parent educator for 15 years, her own journey with ADHD began after her second child's birth. Drawn to the Focus program and transformed by its impact, Natalie has since evolved into a Focus ADHD coach. I got to train her. She is so good, and she's dedicated to supporting parents with ADHD. Now, I want to reiterate, we're not here to make a judgment about marijuana use, but we are going to chat about it and give some helpful skills and perspective for those of you who are interested and or might want to decrease your usage. And hey, while you're listening to this podcast, if you're loving it, would you take a second to give it a 5-star rating? make sure you're subscribed, share it to your socials, do all the things like the YouTubers say. When I listen to my kids watching YouTube and they say, like, share, comment down below. That would be so, so helpful so that we can get the word out and help as many people with ADHD as possible. So please help me welcome my guest, Natalie. Thank you so much for being here. Hello, dear.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad to be chatting with you. I have loved watching your evolution. It was such an honor to train you as a coach. You are a very good coach. I'm so glad you're here.
I am so glad to be here and share my story with everyone.
So tell us a little bit about your ADHD journey. What has that looked like for you? So how old are you right now?
I'm 37.
Okay. When were you diagnosed with ADHD?
I was diagnosed, So about right before I turned 35. Yeah.
Okay. Not too long ago.
No, maybe 34. You know, numbers.
Sure. What is time?
So yes, my youngest daughter is turning 4 in January. So I was diagnosed right before her first birthday. Okay. So yeah. And I had some suspicion for a few months before then. Mm-hmm. Saw a therapist and, you know, that's how the ball started to get rolling there. It was, you know, during 2020 pandemic time when everyone was home learning a lot about themselves.
Yeah. Trying to survive.
Yes. Trying to survive. Motherhood was getting really tricky. And I was like, this seems harder than it should be. And I was really feeling stuck. And yeah, therapy had made a big difference. I didn't have an ADHD specific therapist. So, you know, we did a lot of like, you know, past trauma and all that stuff really like formed a good, you know, core basis of like, you know, starting the healing process. But you know, I started listening to a lot of podcasts about ADHD. And that's how I found you. Mm-hmm. Join Focused.
That's awesome. And when you joined Focus, what was that like for you coming into the community and kind of learning about the way that I approach ADHD healing? Like what was that pathway like for you?
It was really amazing because I saw this like huge community of people supporting each other. And then I also was just learning so much. I was an educator. I worked with, you know, mostly preschool age, early elementary school kids. And I just had a very different idea of what ADHD was and how it just presents so differently in adults and it presents so differently in women as well. So I was just like hyper-focused, learning, researching, doing the courses, and definitely not showing up perfectly the first few months. Two young kids, it was, you know, I didn't make the live calls a lot, you know, I wasn't getting coached a lot, but I was like still seeing so much progress. It was blowing my mind. I was seeing myself change in ways that I never thought were possible, realizing that these weren't just like character flaws. And they were real, you know, it was just my brain working differently and then finding ways to manage that. And I was like, oh, it's actually possible. Like, I don't have to feel stuck in this cycle. And I had a lot of, you know, just thoughts. And I was learning how those thoughts weren't really true. They were really just like opinions, stories I've been telling myself for years and years. And that it was possible to change.
My gosh, it's amazing. Give us an example. Do you mind giving us an example of some of those thoughts? What were those like judgments or opinions that kind of you always believed to be true and then realized like, oh, it's like just a thought?
Yeah, there was a lot. I think one that pops into my mind right away was this kind of like needing to be perfect. And like, I had this like perfectionism thing that was always running in my head. And I think it came from also being a teacher before being a mom. So like, oh, I can do this. This is like, no problem. I've worked with kids forever. And then hit the reality hitting that, like, it's not the same as teaching. It's so much harder. And then, you know, kind of beating myself up that I wasn't this like perfect Instagram mom. Like I wasn't this perfect, like things were messy and like things were not as easy as I thought they were going to be. And I also remember just like thinking that like, oh, I'm just like a messy person. Like, you know, my life is just going to be a little bit messy. I'm like, my space is kind of messy, my car is kind of messy, and then kind of getting into focus and being like, oh, I just didn't really have the tools and systems in place to manage that. And if I keep thinking like, oh, I'm just messy, and beating myself up, like, oh, a mom, like a good mom would never be like this or whatever, it was never going to get fixed.
Yeah.
And so like acknowledging that and then being like, okay, like I have steps now and support to move forward. And like, it made a huge difference. Like all of a sudden, like it wasn't this huge battle in my head going back and forth of like, I should do this, I should do that. It was just like, oh, I can do it. I just got to like make time for it. I just got to like take small steps. I got to ask for support and be really compassionate with myself.
That's beautiful. So you're here today to talk about your journey with smoking pot. And I'm so glad that you are willing to share your story. I'm so just proud of you for the ways that you have been able to make changes that you want to make. You shared with me, why don't you share the news? But you shared with me when we first started rolling some really exciting news. So go ahead and share that with everybody.
So this month has been 1 year since I stopped smoking or using cannabis. And it's just been amazing. If you would have told me a few years ago that I would have been like a year sober from it, I wouldn't believe you. Like it wasn't a possibility in my brain.
And that's incredible.
I feel great.
That's so great. It's so fun. It's so fun to hear that. So can you please walk us through your journey? So you're in California. It's been legal there for a long time. What was it like for you? When did you start? What do you think were like the catalysts for you smoking?
So yeah, I started at the end of high school. It was just really normalized, always around, pretty easy to get. I mean, it wasn't legal for us, you know, in high school, but it was very easy to get, probably easier than alcohol. You know, it was one of those things. Yeah, it was just always around. Parties, friends' houses. And I, you know, undiagnosed ADHD, I had a mind that was always going. It's always hard for me to fall asleep. Always hard to maybe like feel comfortable in social situations because I was like hyper-focusing on like, oh, what do they think about me? Oh, their mood changed. Like, and I was just always on and it was exhausting. I didn't want to go out because it was just exhausting. So when I first started using, I realized like, oh my gosh, I could fall asleep in 2 minutes after I smoke. That was amazing for me. I can go to a party and like just be in the moment and not care. And I think this happens with people with alcohol too. Like they all of a sudden it's like this social lubricant, right? Like you can just feel good. And that was great for me. You know, I had been going through some family stuff in high school and that was definitely a big catalyst. My parents were about to get divorced. My mom had gone through a cancer diagnosis and then she was in remission, but then all of a sudden they were divorcing. So it was like a big, heavy time. So when I could be out with my friends and I could be, even if I was alone, I didn't want to think or feel about any of it. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to like think about divorce. I didn't want to think about the cancer. It could come back. Is my mom feeling okay? Now what's going to happen? It was just like all the worries would go away. All of a sudden, you know, you'd use and everything felt better. Everything felt more manageable. And I felt like, oh, this is great. I'll do this for the rest of my life. And that's pretty much what I did for a long time. You know, I went to San Francisco for college. Same thing. It was everywhere. You know, then when I turned, I think 18, you could get a medical card. But there was like places on the street you could just walk in and be like, the doctor would be next door to like the place where you got the card. And you would just go to the doctor first, say like, oh, it's really hard for me to sleep or I have my back really hurts. They'd be like, here's a prescription, go next door.
Wow.
So that was before like it became legal. This was probably, you know, 2005, 2006.
Okay.
So yeah, that's what we would do in college. And that was what me and my friends did for fun. And it was just like a very normal, natural thing that we did for fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it really numbed me in a way I think I needed to, because I couldn't deal with things, you know, and yeah, lots of family stuff. So it was, and I was very removed from it. So then I would go home and be like, wow, this is overwhelming.
Sure.
I need to smoke. And it was always like, I felt very, even like when only using for a few years, I felt very attached to it. Like I didn't want to go travel somewhere if I couldn't bring it. And it started like limiting my ability to do things. 'Cause I'm like, oh, if I study abroad, how would I get weed? You know,
Wow.
I went to France with a boyfriend at the time, and first thing we did when we got there was find weed. We didn't go to the museum. We didn't do anything. We like found someone on the street. Like, and I think back to that kind of situation. I'm like, oh my God. Like that was addiction. You know, that wasn't just like trying to have fun. That was like seeking out these things that we think are going to make us feel better, but it was just like really changing our experience of things. Yeah. So I think the only time I really stopped was when I got pregnant. And when we were trying to get pregnant, I like, you know, took a big break, but in my head, I knew I would go back. So it wasn't quitting in my mind. I was like, and I was so sick through most of my pregnancy because I think my body was also used to, you know, feeling a certain way. And then it wasn't. And yeah, I had like really hard pregnancies. So as soon as like I was done breastfeeding, I was like, perfect. Time to go. And I really did for a long time try to use it when, you know, my kids were little as like a glass of wine at the end of the night. Like that's how I would like justify it. So I'm like, I'm not smoking all day. I'm using it at the, like, they're asleep. It's like the end of the night. I need this to go to sleep. I need this to like unwind from like the chaos of the day, you know, but I would think about it a lot during the day. And yeah, and as like, you know, weed became legal and it became so easy. I mean, there's weed clubs like just blocks from me. So it's just, you know, it's interesting.
Wow. I'm really curious. Can you pinpoint ADHD symptoms in your adolescence that you were trying to kind of medicate as you started to use?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I almost used it as like a dopamine hit because I would smoke and then get things done. Yeah, like, oh, I gotta do the dishes. Okay, if I smoke, then that will make it so much more easier or fun, like more fun to do it. And I would see myself wanting to do that a lot. Where I was like, I need to do like smoke before I do this because it will feel better. And not having that motivation like intrinsically to do it. Feeling like, oh, and you know, also like eating at the end of the day, like I'm not that hungry if I don't smoke. And same with like sleep, like I'm gonna have my mind will just be racing if I don't smoke. And really told myself so many stories of like why I needed it, like over and like it was just like playing a loop of like, this is just what you need. This is what your body needs. It's natural. You know, it like comes from the earth. It's like so much better than like drinking a bottle of wine at night, which, you know, a lot of my other friends were doing. So it was like, I'm like, everyone has their vice. This is totally fine. I would just justify it and, but not realizing like how much of like a hold it had on me.
Can you talk more about that hold? So I loved your story about like studying abroad or just going to France and being like, okay, the very first thing that we need to do here is find weed.
Yeah.
That is fascinating. And I love that, like in retrospect, you can see like, oh, okay, that's addiction. That's not just like recreational for fun once in a while. Like if it's available, it's there. It's like, this is priority numero uno. So like, what other ways did you see that it kind of had a hold on you?
Like, you know, if I started to see like I was running low, anxiety. Like full on, like, when am I going to be able to get it more? Like, you know, will I have enough for tonight? And just like, you know, thinking, planning ahead, you know, even though it's probably pretty easy to get, like my brain would immediately go like, we need more, like we're almost out. And so that was definitely tricky. And I guess like other times, yeah, it would be, you know, going back home to LA and immediately like needing to find some. Immediately, if not bringing some with me, you know, and taking like doing younger, you know, pre being married and stuff, like doing risky things, like bringing some on the airplane with me. Like, what was it? You know, looking back, I'm like, that was dumb. But I was like so set on like It's totally fine. I'm going through tiny airports. Like, it's no big deal. I'm like, pretty big deal. Pretty big deal.
I think that the point needs to be made that, like, it really did help to soothe you.
Yes.
And
Yes.
I think with anything that we use, including medication, there's a very important point to be made that, like, we're using it because there is pain or there is something wrong.
Yeah.
And so we're looking for an outside source to soothe that. So in what ways did you find it really soothing?
I felt just like a love and comfort for it. Like I really had this like relationship with it. I felt like that it did so many positive things for me. And you know, I think as I got older, those positive things just started to dwindle a little bit.
Can you talk about that? Like
So
what? Yeah, I'm interested in that kind of line where it's no longer helpful. It just becomes more of something that's working against you.
Right. Well, as my kids got, you know, as when they had kids and as they started to get older, I realized that I was wanting to smoke more and more during the day. And I didn't feel good about that. I didn't want to do that, you know, but my brain was telling me, like, you can't handle this. Like, you know, you're overwhelmed. This is like, you're, I don't think I had the word like overstimulated, but I was definitely overstimulated. And I didn't know, I didn't have any other coping mechanisms. Smoking was the only thing I went to consistently for years that helped me calm down. I was not in touch with them. I couldn't even feel my emotions half the time, you know, and then they were just like bad. I feel bad. I feel like I need a nap. Like, you know, I couldn't. And I think that was the thing that led me to therapy at first. And trying to stop smoking weed was not the reason I started therapy. You know, I did not, that was not on my horizon of like things I needed to change. That was like that part of me I thought in my head was going to be part of me forever. Like, it was just like, this is just who I am. This is what I need. I'm not even going to talk to my therapist about smoking weed. Not going to mention it. They're going to ask me and I'm going to say nope. And just
This
talk about
topic's off
anything else.
limits. We don't need to discuss it.
Yeah, because I'm like, I got it under control. I know what works for me and my body, you know? And I was really scared, you know, that like they would tell me something I didn't want to hear, like maybe you shouldn't be smoking. And I was also scared as I got diagnosed for ADHD. I'm like, maybe they won't give me medication. So what was in the, you know, they don't, you know, the place I went, they didn't drug test me or anything. And I know some people's doctors do, and they specific reason why their doctor will not give them like a certain type of medication. So, and I was nervous about that because I was like, but I needed to sleep. I need it, you know, so I'm just not going to mention it and like throw up any red flags because I don't want to think that I'm like a drug addict. And even though I am very addicted to weed. So I started therapy and I started coaching. And as I started doing the coach training program and I became more coachable, like I think that was one of the things like the coach training program taught me, like I became coachable. Before I was like, just like taking in information, going, yeah, like that makes sense and applying it here and there. But like when I had to learn how to like self-coach and I had to like talk to other coaches like multiple times a week about like what was going on in my life, I started seeing this really big shift and I was like, yeah, things are changing. I need to like really look at something because things aren't changing enough. And I'm seeing some of my other like peers like really making these huge strides or being able to be super open about things. And I was like really looking at my life and I'm like, oh, the one thing I haven't changed in years and basically 18 years is smoking. And it like hit, like it was like it seems dumb, like duh, like you know, you're in it, but you don't see it and you don't see that there's a way out. And all of a sudden I was like, maybe I don't want to anymore. And it was like shocking to me because I was, if you would have told me even a few months before that, I would have been like, no, I'm smoking forever. Like this is just me. this is totally fine. Like, I can totally make it work, like, whatever. And I had that realization. And yeah, and I think my brain was so much more coachable. I immediately started just like, well, I saw a TikTok about a girl and she had been sober for a year from weed. And she like just spoke to me, you know? And I was just like, that is how I feel. Oh my God, someone put it into words. And all of a sudden, it was like when I listened to your podcast for the first time, I was just like, yeah, someone gets it. Someone, like, I don't feel shame around it anymore. I don't like this person's making me feel like, okay, like there's ways forward to change. And she had like a 4-day course of like walk away from weed. And I said, let's do it. And on the 4th day, I said, that's it. No more. Well, I'm getting chills just like thinking about it, because it was like, yeah, like you think sometimes like you need all these, like you're going to need a big intervention or you're going to need like a 30-day program or whatever. And it was just like 4 days. And we just like talked about that, like, it's just a plant. You don't have to have this like story about how like it fixes everything for you and that it like does this and that. Like, it could just be a plant again. And like, you are in control of your own life. When you get an urge and a craving, you can like pause. You can take a breath. You can go on a walk, distract yourself. There was like all these tools, and I incorporated most of them. And I just like made it a point in my head. I was like, you know, I don't want to be coaching people on things about their life that they want to change and not be able to change something that I really want to change.
Wow, that's so profound. And it shows so much integrity. I just want to point out, because, you know, practicing what you preach is such a huge part of being a coach. And not that, I mean, obviously we're not perfect, but when we coach people toward change, but we are holding or withholding change from ourselves, that's not in alignment.
Yeah. And I was feeling that. I was feeling like, what's off? Like, why? And it was almost like, you know, like this secret thing. Like, I had this double life sometimes of like, I would meet other parents at school and blah, blah. I'm like, but can they really get to know me that well? Because I have this other part of me. I'm like, what if I become really good friends with them and they don't like parents who smoke weed? That would just devastate me, right? And so I would like hold back on like trying to make connections with people, because I was like always scared of like someone finding out my secret, you know, that I was like this kind of mom. And I think it plays into that perfectionism that I, you know, I wanted to have this certain image of myself, and like using cannabis just like wasn't really aligning with me anymore.
As a person with ADHD and occasional anxiety and depression, food and nutrition are parts of my life that have always been a struggle for me. I don't love to cook. I forget to eat meals, and the texture of mushy cooked vegetables really drives my sensory issues crazy. This is why I rely on AG1 as a daily nutrition supplement that supports whole body health. Now, I started using this product 1.5 years ago on my own with my own money, paying out of pocket, and I've loved it. I've used it persistently, and I've noticed a big difference in the way that I feel. So when AG1 reached out to sponsor this podcast, it was literally the first partnership ever that I've wanted to say yes to. And so here we are. I love that AG1 is made with 75 high quality vitamins and minerals and whole food sourced ingredients. I love that no matter how inconsistent my diet is, I can always count on it to provide daily nutrients and gut health support that my body craves. My body is like, oh, actual nutrition. Thank you so much, Kristen Carter. So if you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/IHaveADHD. That's drinkag1.com/IHaveADHD. Check it out. How long of a period of time was it from the first time that you wondered, do I want to stop, to the day that you committed to stopping? Do you remember how like long was it, like days, weeks, months?
It was about a month.
That's not very long.
No. And I see people who struggle with like stopping and starting back again. And and I think it really has to do with like being coachable. Like I really like, I keep going back to that, but I was just like, I understood how to take direction and how to like implement things. And like my brain was just like, okay, this is like, I could change my thoughts so easily about it that like, I don't think I would have been able to.
Wow.
If I hadn't had those skills, you know, that if I didn't have those ways to like, you know, become aware of your feeling, you know, like feel it, breathe through it. Like, instead of just being like, oh, this doesn't feel good, so I'm going to go back.
Yeah.
You know, this is hard. So, you know, and I think that made such a big difference. And, and I think my brain kind of hyper-focused on like the quitting. Like I spent that month like researching, like, why is it bad? Blah, blah, blah. You know, and a few months before I had started a medication that was really working. It was just like, felt life-changing. And it was making me not want to smoke either. Like I would wake up in the morning and I would take my medication and all of a sudden, like I was able to get things done, feel more like regulated a little bit more. And that made a big difference.
Dude, huge we difference. Need to pause there because I think that that is kind of the underlying theme here where we have to feel better. We have to, right? Like we are just human. And yeah. We can only take so much pain, so much stimulation, so much effort. Like we can only take so much. And at some point we have got to feel better. And if we're not properly diagnosed, medicated, whether it's for ADHD or something else, we will find something else to help us feel better. So it might be overeating. It might be like a sex addiction. It might be like numbing ourselves out on social media all day long. Like, we will find a way to feel better. So the fact that you were put on a medication for ADHD that was actually working has to be included in the catalyst, right? For you having the ability to stop using cannabis.
And I think back, I'm like, I don't know if I would have been able to stop if I hadn't found the medication. I mean, maybe I could have. Mm-hmm. And I did end up going off that medication over summer for a little bit. I just took a break just to see how, you know, little experiment I did on myself. Sure. And now I'm back on, but going off the medication didn't make me go back to weed. So I was like proud of myself,
amazing, you know, for that.
And I just have so many different coping mechanisms now. And I can handle so many things. Mm-hmm. And I think it is a combination of like, yes, being medicated, having support, you know, and also just having systems in place to know what to do when like big feelings come up or when I'm getting like activated by my kids who are like, they're not emotionally regulated. They're so little, you know? And it's like, I can't just like put on earmuffs and just like, la, 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 like not deal with it. Like I have to be like that role model for them. Cause like, mm-hmm. I didn't have that as a kid. Like I had parents who were like, you know what? Your feelings are a lot. Like time to go to your room, calm down. Come back when you're ready to talk to the family. And I would just be like crying or whatever. And it's like, I didn't have that, you know, that model. And it's like, I want to be that for them so badly because I know what it like an important skill that is. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm able to do it. I mean, not perfectly.
Sure.
Sometimes it's just a lot, but I feel like I'm making these like big steps toward that. And that's worth it for me.
So beautiful. I love how you keep talking about having coping skills because, you know, when we are lacking coping skills, we choose the thing that is going to make us feel the best. And for you, that was cannabis. And it was the tool in your toolkit. It was like, I've got this toolkit and it's weed. Like, that's my toolkit, right? You talk about emotional regulation as being in your toolkit now. What was that like for you to begin to learn how to feel your feelings?
It was super uncomfortable. I had to look at the feelings chart all the time. Like the feelings wheel of like, you know, here's the ranges of like sad to angry to happy to excited. Cause I'm like, I have three emotions. And it was
happy,
like,
sad, mad.
Yeah.
Me too.
Oh, you know, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, overwhelmed. Like I don't have to be mad. I can be overwhelmed. I can feel, you know, unregulated. I can feel, you know, stressed. Like, and then once I can put a name to it, and like, you know, you in focus, we learn how to like locate the feeling in our body. And like, you know, all these kind of like all these steps to like, and sometimes in ADHD brain, you're like, no, I just want to feel better. Like, I don't want to go
get there
through
faster.
I don't want to go through all these steps.
Yeah.
This is a lot. And it took a while, like, to really integrate that, because it was more exciting for me at the beginning of the program to like listen to other people's stories and like, you know, do anything else except like the work. And you had Dr. Holloway on your, I think on just like the big podcast.
Yeah,
on
the public podcast.
On this podcast. That interview, it was like a two-part interview. And that interview just really spoke to me in so many ways. And then it was like, you know, he was very factual about like what ADHD can do to you. Not do to you, but like how you experience it.
Sure.
But also like the importance of like medication and the importance of like having these like systems in place. Mm-hmm. And it really like kicked something off where like the next few months I was like, I'm diving deep into the work. Because before that episode, I was like, do I need focus anymore? I'd been in it for a year. And I was like, you know, maybe I've gotten enough out of it. And then I listened to that one and I was like, double down. I'm like, no, wow. I really need to like focus and invest on like how to actually process these emotions and not just like have this like baseline understanding of ADHD.
Sure. How much do you think emotional regulation has played a part in your ability to overcome addiction?
It's been a huge impact being able to emotionally regulate. Like, I don't think it would have been as smooth. Like, you know, maybe I would have gone back. Maybe I would have like, you know, started using again, maybe stopped again. Like, maybe I had some back and forth because of feelings. Like, I mean, feelings are going to drive so much. They're going to drive like our thoughts and our actions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, being able to like process emotions made things so much, you know, it wasn't, you say easier, but like, it was hard, you know, to
It actually like, it makes it harder sort of, but like manageable. I don't know. Yeah.
Right. Like, and I was just like, I told myself, like, I'm willing to feel the uncomfortable feelings, right? Like, I'm like going to process some of these things that like, I didn't process at, like in high school when like my parents were divorcing, you know, or I didn't process when like my mom was sick and like all these like fear and anxiety and like I'm carrying them into my relationship with my husband and with my kids, you know, and like therapy definitely helped in some ways to kind of go back and like look at things and talk about things. But in other ways, like I am living right now in this moment, right? And so like when I get a feeling of like, you know, of like, I can't do this. I really just wish I could just like zone out. Like, I really wish I could just feel numb. I wish I could feel like nothing. Cause sometimes like that feeling comes up again where I'm just like, I had a hard day. I just like, don't want to feel this way. But I know that that feeling just doesn't go away. It just like buries itself like deep into you. And so if like, I don't feel it right now, I'm going to feel it again later. And maybe it's actually going to feel worse, or it's going to manifest into something that's going to be so much like, it's going to be harder to process, or it's going to come out in like me yelling at my kids, or it's going to come out in me like snapping at my husband, or like getting into an argument. Like, if I can just sit and feel like today was hard, now what feelings are coming up? Can I process this? Can like, if I could do today over, like what other things can I think, what other emotions can I pull from and just like breathe? It makes a difference. And I've definitely gotten like into breath work more like in the past like year or two, and like being able to like breathe through things and like not meditate, because my brain, you know, meditation
it's
is
a no.
It's unless it's like some guided meditation in like a yoga class, it's a hard no for me.
Right.
But like being able to like take a moment and like do so like a couple really deep breaths, and then like I can feel that emotion much easier, you know, just to sit there and like be still, have an intention, find the awareness, process the emotion, and like kind of just look at the situation and be like, okay, I have compassion for myself. It's hard being mom. It's, you know, it's hard having a 7 and a 3-year-old who like get along and then they don't get along and they're like yelling and the days are long, you know? Yeah. So,
wow. I'm curious what led you to decide to become a coach. So you were in Focused, you were still smoking. So at what point did you decide, like, hey, I want to learn these tools. I want to help other people.
Yeah. I was a parent educator and teacher, you know, for years before I was diagnosed and I joined Focus and all that. And I loved working with kids, but as I had my own kids, it got harder to see myself in the classroom again.
Yeah.
And because, you know, when before you have kids, you can leave and there's no kids at your home when you come home. And then when the pandemic hit, that was like a hard no. I'm like, not going back in the classroom. It's not going to work. But right before my youngest was born, I worked as a kind of like a parent and child class, like facilitator. And I loved working with the parents and like holding space for them. And especially when their kids were really little, that was just really, really nice for me. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I could offer them a lot of like insight. And I just started moving towards like, maybe I don't necessarily want to work with kids and maybe I want to work with parents. And being in Focus, I saw a lot of people had kids and they were struggling with so many of the things like I'd been struggling with. And as I started seeing like myself change and grow and process things, I was like, yeah, this seems right. Like it just felt really good. And I looked at some other coaching programs. And when you offered yours, I was like, oh my gosh, the stars are aligning. And I think like there is something to be said by learning from someone who you really respect and you really like. I knew your style of coaching. I understood what I would be learning. And I was like, well, if she was able to help me this much, this is the person I want to learn from, you know? And it was a great decision.
That makes my heart so happy. That's so awesome. So tell me about the people that you help now. So you're a coach, you work with parents, and you know, you've said like you would love to support people who are struggling with cannabis addiction as well, if that is also something that they would want to reach out to you for. So tell me about the work that you want to be doing now.
Yeah, I love working with parents and kind of holding that space for them, going through the challenge of like, how do I manage my ADHD, but also manage like being a parent in like a chaotic like world.
Yes.
You know? And, you know, I think there is something to be said about having someone to just talk to about like the struggles that are coming up, who like I don't have judgment. I've been there too. And I think that, you know, it's just different than talking to a friend who is just like, you know, is always going to be there to support and like amp you up. But like a coach is going to be there to kind of like shine a light on things that maybe you haven't thought of before, or maybe ask you questions that help you come to like a deeper realization about things. And I would definitely want to help support people who are going through like a journey of like, maybe I want to stop using cannabis. Maybe this is something I can do when I didn't think it was possible before, because I definitely hold space for people who are like, you know what? Cannabis really works for me right now.
Sure.
And that's great too. Cause I think there is people who it has like medicinal effects for you. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm so happy you found something that worked. Like, but I'm just here for people who are maybe ready to explore the options of like, I am capable of maybe doing something else.
I love the way you put that. This just reminds me so much of when I kind of had a come to Jesus moment, so to speak, when I was unmedicated, not taking my ADHD seriously. I had 3 little kids. I was also trying to like run a business. And I remember day drinking. I would have never considered myself an alcoholic because I didn't drink a lot, but I remember just like kind of sneaking into the cabinet and like, it was like 2:00 in the afternoon and everything is so chaotic and I have to like clean up and then go to work. And like the kids are finally napping, but I know it's not going to last long. And just like reaching for wine at 2:00 in the afternoon, it's not the best. Like, you don't feel good. And you're like, wait a second, I know this person, but I, like we've said so many times, I needed something. I didn't have the tools. I was not okay. And this just goes back to the point, like, we are human. We can only take so much. We will find a way to feel better. We have to. And I can still see, I had this red hutch. It was so cute. I was so proud. I painted it red. It was so cute. And in the bottom, we would keep alcohol. And I just, and like, I wasn't a heavy drinker, but to think of myself in that position, reaching for alcohol at 2 p.m. on a Tuesday, that's not what you want.
Yeah. And like you said, like, you just, you needed something to calm like this chaos that was going on, like, internally and externally.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's like not having the support and not having like the way to emotionally regulate and the way to, you know, to even know that it's possible to do something different. It's hard.
If I had had somebody like you at the time, I wish I had, because I remember feeling so much shame. I didn't ever tell anybody in my real life. Like, I can say it on the podcast here, you know, just for thousands of people, but it's because it's a good story. I mean, it was like my actual life, but it's a good story. But I could have never said to my husband, like, hey, I'm like drinking at 2 p.m. Like, I would have never been able to say that. Mm-hmm. So to know that there are people like you out there where you can just like be so real and so honest and just be like, I'm so ashamed, but like, I need other tools. Like, please give me tools.
Yeah. And I think that there's not a lot of spaces for people who aren't in like full blown addiction. Like, 'cause there's AA, you know, and then there's like rehab, but then like, what about the people who are just like, maybe not at that point to go to those kind of like, you know, places. Those places are so amazing for people who need that. But for other people, it's like, I don't know if I need like a 12 step program. Sure. I don't know if I need to go into like an inpatient or outpatient thing. Like, maybe I just need someone to talk to. Maybe I just need to like, and there, it's hard to find those people. And so I think that making myself available to those people, like, I just want to be that support and that example. Like, that was like really another driving force behind quitting, was like, I do want to be this example. Like, 'cause I did feel so much shame behind being that mom who needed to smoke at the end of the night, you know, the needed, like, who felt like I couldn't manage life really without it. And I couldn't have told anyone in my life. It was such like this like behind closed doors thing that just didn't feel good anymore.
Yeah. Such a good point that there's not a lot of space being held for people who, like me, you know, I wasn't necessarily an addict, but I did need something at 2 p.m. on a Tuesday to reach for, and that didn't feel good. But I would have never gone to a 12-step. I wasn't at the point where somebody would have done an intervention and like sent me to rehab. But like, having someone out there where I could be like, I don't know what's going on, but like, I need a little bit of support and help here to like not do this anymore. So good. I have one last question. It's a weird question. Are you sleeping? I'm so concerned about your sleep because you talk about using cannabis to sleep and it really helped you sleep. And now I'm just like, you haven't used in a year. Like, are you sleeping?
I have put in different systems in place that have definitely helped. Most nights I end up taking like a bath, which like really helps like calm my nervous system down. And it helps me just feel amazing. I'm like, I tell my husband, like, I'm addicted to baths. Like, don't, you're asking me if I'm taking a bath tonight. The answer is probably yes.
Yeah.
I also try to do like, really don't look at my phone an hour before bed. I try to read. Reading gets me like my eyes so tired. And then as I lay in bed and the thoughts start coming, I breathe through it. I give myself that compassion of like, yeah, you're not going to fall asleep in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have that expectation of myself. Yeah. And I don't get like, I don't start feeling anxiety about it. I don't start feeling like I'll never fall asleep now. Like I just let myself, I acknowledge the thoughts that come up and I do some breathing and I just like, and I'm just there. And sometimes it does take 20, 30 minutes to fall asleep, but I'm like, okay with that. And I like plan for that. So I don't go to sleep at 12:30, you know?
Right.
I try to get into bed at like 11. Like me and my husband have like kind of a late night schedule, but you know, I try to get in bed as early as I can and just have that, like hold that space for myself and be like, yeah, sleep's not going to be as easy as it was, but like I'm dreaming again. Like when you smoke, you don't dream really. At least I didn't.
Wow.
I didn't have dreams for years and now I have them again. And some are weird, but it's just, it's nice to have that, like to know that like my body is recalibrating and it's like my dreams are coming back online. And that's so cool to me.
Wow, that's so beautiful, because it sounds like what you're doing is just really embracing your humanity.
Right? Like, oh, but yeah.
Gross, but also amazing. Oh, Natalie, I just love you so much. Thank you so much for being here. Tell us where we can find you. If somebody is resonating with your story, if somebody is just like, my goodness, I need some support and I want it to be from Natalie, where can they find you?
You can find me at Natalie C ADHD on Instagram.
That rhymes and I love it so much.
And I'm setting up my website. It's going to be NatalieChenCoaching.com. So you can find me there eventually. Yeah. And hopefully in the next release of the Focus Coaches, I will be in that little directory.
Yes.
Getting
yes,
my
yes.
stuff together to be in that. So you can reach out to Focus and they can provide you with the directory. So yeah, that's where you can find me.
Awesome. We'll link all of that. We'll link your website because somebody will be listening to this and 3, 6 months, whatever, and it'll be up by then. So thank you for being here. Thank you for being vulnerable. Thank you for evolving and growing and being that example so that other people can follow you and just like get support from you. I just really appreciate you.
Oh my gosh. No problem. Thank you. Thank you for your podcast. It's really changed my life. So, so happy to be here.
Hey, ADHDer, I see you. I know exactly what it's like to feel lost, confused, frustrated, and like no one out there really understands the way that your brain works. That's why I created Focused. Focused is my monthly coaching program where I lead you through a step-by-step process of understanding yourself, feeling better, and creating the life that you know you're meant for. You'll study, be coached, grow, and make amazing changes alongside of other educated professional adults with ADHD from all over the world. Visit ihaveadhd.com/focused to learn more.